Unexplained Truth, the show where we go into some of the conspiracies, mysteries, and anomalies in the world around us. I'm your host, Paul, and with me this week is Ule Damagard. Ule, are you there?
I sure am.
Well, thanks so much for coming. And along for the ride is my friend Jerry. Jerry?
Present, sir.
Well, thanks again. So, Ule, you've done a lot of work in researching, I guess, what you would call, what shall we say, the coup d'etat in slow motion, right? The title of your book. And you also have an interesting website, which could you tell our listeners about?
My website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com in plural, because there's more than one going on. And
really?
I've done about 30 years plus looking into major assassinations, so-called terror acts, false flag operations, and so on. That is what I've specialized in.
Yes, indeed you have. And you've got a lot on your website that listeners can check out. Quite an amazing amount of work there. You know, when you talk about all these false flags and so on and so forth, fake events, I mean, aren't they really overwhelming us these days? It just seems like every day I see something that looks suspicious. What do you feel?
I think in the old days when we were not aware of them, when they took out JFK and in the 60s, 70s, people were so naive and had no idea what was going on. And at that time, the false flags were mostly used to start wars or major events. They didn't bother to do minor ones. But then after 9/11, and especially after the Boston Marathon bombing, when people, if you looked at Google search on the search word false flag operation, it skyrocketed. That was the one where normal people just said, oh my God, hang on, can this really be it? And they started searching for it. After that, so many people have started to become aware of what's going on. And I've done my absolute utmost to expose the different methods that are being used to push forward their very brutal agenda, using false flag operations to dupe the population into believing that it's the work of lone crazy guys, instead of understanding that this is a major and very, very big agenda, very dark agenda that is going on. So I think they're getting to a point where they're getting quite desperate, because people are waking up in the millions now, and they're trying to push us into into the corral where they can control us. And they're trying to do it with these false flag operations. I mean, as far as I've been able to check out, more or less all of the so-called mass shootings globally have been staged events. I'm not really sure if there is one that is really what we've been told. Every single time when I look really into them, it's the same old thing again and again and again and again. And now they've gone to the agenda that they call it themselves, scare of the week, where they just pump. It's like being up against Mike Tyson, you know, they just hit us all the time. Boom, 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 boom. So we won't have time to look into the details of each and every single one of them.
Ule, when you say staged event, can we clarify that? Because I notice there's a lot of confusion floating around the internet about that term. Some people think when you say staged event that means nobody ever dies, you know, the killers didn't do anything. Is that your interpretation, or do you think when you say staged, do you mean like they could have set up a patsy who doesn't really, you know what the plan was?
It's different from different so-called events. I mean, sometimes people really get killed, but many times lately they're staged with actors, and they're carried out really, really sloppily, very clumsily. If you start looking into them, it's like, oh, come on, really low budget, no preparation, using the same actors again and again, you know, and not something to be proud of if I were them. In the old days, they had lots of time to prepare. They had massive amounts for budget and really skilled people. And I mean, like with the JFK, they pulled that off. We're still confused after 50 years. But these ones lately, they're so badly done.
Yeah.
Hey, Ule?
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, Ule. I think, do you know the word in English, B-movie? The B movies went away.
Yeah, exactly that one.
But they're making them for us every day with all of these shootings and what have you. You know, drills.
But you know, I almost feel sad for them sometimes, because it's like, if you have a theme, it's all based on the old Roman tactic: problem, reaction, solution. They secretly create a problem. In this case, we're talking mass shootings, but this can be bombs. It can be so-called terror attacks. It can be viruses. It can be financial crashes or whatever. They secretly create that to get the reaction from the public. The reaction they're looking for is the emotional, help us, help us, help us. And then we, the population, will turn towards the people that we have elected to help us in these situations, not understanding that they are actually the ones who have created the problem. And so we will say, please, please help us. And they will then come with a solution. So whenever things like this happen, it's very important to be aware of the solution that is being presented to us. This will nowadays, it will be within minutes after this thing. The thing happens, media comes there, media that is controlled to a major part. The reporter will say, this has happened. Most of the time they would point straight at a patsy that has absolutely nothing to do with it, that has been prepared beforehand. So they would say, oh my God, this has happened, point at the patsy, point at the patsy, point at the patsy, and then they would deliver the solution. Right there on live TV, you will see it very often within a few minutes, they will have served you the whole thing, so that your mind is set to, oh my God, it's the patsy, and thank God, here comes the solution. Do, 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 do. You know, like the cavalry in the old Western movies. But it's the solution that we have to be aware
that's
of.
That's the problem, yeah. Hey, Uli, I think, at least for Americans, this might be something to contemplate. But I think the powers that be in the U.S. started escalating their theatrical Hollywood special effects stuff. Maybe about 2 years ago, there was a shooting that was going to happen near Portland, Oregon. And basically an off-duty guard, security guard, pulled out a gun and stopped it. And I think that in the U.S. this is a huge risk. If they use real patsies and real guns, so many people carry guns in the United States that they might stop it in the middle if you did a real event that wasn't totally controlled.
I think this is exactly one of the turning points where they said, oh my God, we need to be able to control all parameters, you know, and that's why nowadays it will look like a film set. You know, they will shut off the streets in both ends where it happens. They will control all the pedestrians, whatever is in the background, it will be under their control, whatever vehicles is in there and so on. So you will, when you start seeing the footage and so on, you will very soon be able to spot things on a regular basis, like cue markers in the streets, or extras carrying badges around their necks, or the same actors coming again, and so on.
And if I may interrupt, Uli, I heard you in an interview say that you had worked as an extra at different times in movies.
Yeah, I've done that. I did that a lot when we moved to Spain in the beginning. There was a Scandinavian film company on Mallorca that did a lot of commercials, but also real films. So I actually starred as an extra against Daniel Craig, the guy who's now James Bond, in a really crappy movie called Sword of Honor. But so this is the thing, that I spent so many hours sitting waiting, because when you do films, there's so much waiting going on, and especially for the extras. They are driven there to the stage, to the set very early, and they leave the last. And so I've just spent many, many hours, instead of being bored, just trying to look into how do you make a film? How do you do this? How do you do that? How is makeup working? How is the lighting working? How are all of these things? And this has been really helpful for me now when I look into these so-called terror acts or things like that, because it's so obvious when you know how they're set up on a film stage. And then you start seeing the exact same thing, the exact same vehicles, the exact same cue markers, background action, and on all of these things. So this is a very very useful experience when you had to sort of, how should I say, solve this puzzle that these events
represent. Did you ever look into the, I think it was a Nairobi, was it? The mall? Shooting terror. Was it in Nairobi? Anyway, it was the one that where it looked like it was a movie. I mean, they even had all kinds
Kenya,
of videos. Kenya.
Yeah, there's been so many.
Westgate Mall, I think.
I tell you, after all of these years, I'm starting doubting that there is such a thing as a real terrorist, because every single time when you look into it, it's the same thing again and again and again. That if it's not a staged event, then the people carrying it out have been financed, trained, and organized by the same powers. So that just makes me really optimistic, because then I think, oh my God, that's so much easier than me living in a totally crazy, violent world. Now I'm just living in a beautiful world with a violent, tiny little bully that is trying to mess things up for the rest of us, because it is quite a small group that is doing that are behind so much of this mayhem, if I'm correct.
Well, I think you are. They're just overwhelming us with these events now, at least in the States. Does it seem to be the same story in Europe or Spain? Are you getting...
No. It's totally different. The thing is, in the States, you are the ones with the guns. You are the major obstacle for them. This is why all of the mass shootings are in the States, because they want the weapons to be the problem, not mentally ill people, but the weapons. It's a mass shooting, what is the solution? You have to give up your weapons, and especially the automatic ones. They really want the heavy duty weapons, these ones to start with, and then it will end with that you have to give up the knives and spoons and forks and these types of things in the end as well,
But I think it's backfiring a bit, Lule, because the last I heard, one of the most popular gifts for women now is actually handguns, and I think the sales have shot up a lot since all these hoaxes have been going on.
Yeah. But this is the wonderful thing; it backfires, and this, you were talking about B movies before. It's like they have been trying to push on us like Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. How many different variations can they do? How many different opponents or enemies from the outside can you create without it getting really, really boring? And they're running out of options. I mean, what are they going to do? Now they've tried them all.
And then I think people are actually reverse engineering their playbook, right? So, they've noticed trends that, there's always a drill or X, Y, and Z is always happening. And then when the next event occurs, you start looking for these things. And sure enough, you start finding them, right? Like a breadcrumb trail almost.
But this is why I've done hundreds of interviews trying to expose the methods, trying to expose the bullet point list they're using. What are the elements that are always there? So the people, as soon as they hear about the drill and as soon as they hear about a lone crazy guy, that they will say, wait a minute, I'm just going to look into this one before I just buy it without being critical. And since it's the same they're pulling off, that it's the same B-movie they're trying to pull off again and again and again. They're just trying to change the scenery in the background a little bit, but it's the same. So people are like, come on, what do you think? Do you think we're brain dead? And so they're not buying into it anymore. They're not getting scared the way they should. And so now this group behind them are freaking out, I think, because they're getting really, really worried. Because what are they going to do when we really find out in the billions what they've been up to? They are very scared that they would be strangled up or used as a garnish for a pizza or something like that. So this is why they're trying to speed it up, I think. But it's just becoming really sloppy.
Do you think, Ole, and maybe this is sort of a bit of a segue, but do you think that the United States is being set up as the global bad guy, kind of, you know, all these things like the torture probes? And it just seems like it's one negative, terrible, nasty thing after another in regards to the United States. And to me, it almost seems contrived. And I'm just wondering what your take was on that.
No, I'm very sorry to say you have. The states have really deserved. If you look at, I have a friend. His name is Chip Tatum. He's a CIA whistleblower, a deep cover agent for 25 years. He was a black op assassin. He was one of the Night Stalker pilots. He was also one of the pilots in the whole Iran-Contra scandal, and he was the commander of George Bush Sr.'s ultra-secret hit team called Pegasus. They did at least 17 hits worldwide and so on. This is not an amateur. And he spent his whole year, his whole life, adult life, inside the military, inside the CIA and so on. And he says that the worst or the biggest terror tool in the world is the American army. That's his words. And if you look at it, the way I've been able to see over all of these years is that the financial center is in the old town of London, the religious center is in the Vatican, and the war center is in Washington. And now they're using not only the American army, but with the NATO troops and the UN troops joining together to get this massive global army, not to defend us, to control us. And if you look at so-called terrorist nations like Iran, Sudan, Libya, Syria, check out in history how many wars have they started. Is it one, two, maybe three? I would say not. Then you look at the US, and you look from the JFK assassination and onwards, when that was the time they really took over, in my opinion. We're talking about the states having started up in the hundreds of wars. I mean, I've lost count. I don't know how many it is. And also, the states have got more than 150 military bases in other nations.
All right. If I could ask you one more question that's sort of a bit of a segue from the topic of the false flags, but I think it's important nonetheless. What is your take on Putin and Russia? I mean, a lot of people think he's actually just a controlled opposition type figure, and I don't believe that, but I'm just wondering what your take is on it.
It's very hard to know for sure. It is very hard to know for sure. I don't have a clear opinion on that. I don't know who he is for sure. There have been so many of these, you know, like Gorbachev and so on. It turns out that he was a Freemason as well, and a Bilderberger. All these, you know, you have this, this. It looks like opposition, and then after a while, it turns out that they were both in the same game, playing, you know, being members of the same groups behind the scenes. I don't know. He's someone that. I don't know. I think he's what he appears to be, but I'm not sure.
Well, also, I mean, if nothing else, he's coming from, you know, the KGB background. Mm-hmm. And even if you take him more or less on the surface, the view is that he tricked the oligarchs. He deceived many of them, and then he went after them, right? So right off the top, we're talking about a guy who had to essentially use deception to get where he is, right?
Like I say, I'm the wrong person to ask.
Right, so it's going to be hard for us to know is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
There's no question on that. But getting back into the broader, the Hollywoodization of this, I think there are two things on the topic earlier. Jerry was asking about whether America's being made into the fall guy of a sorts. I think what he's trying to say is, let's take, for example, CIA torture or, you know, some of this stuff coming out. It has to be intentional that they're releasing this, right? It's to provoke things. And the question is it to provoke Americans? Is it to provoke people around the world? What are they thinking? Why are they doing this? Or is it to make it so the standards within the military become hopelessly degraded, for example, the U.S. military? You know, you just have to ask why they're doing it, because they have control of the information. They don't have to release it if they don't want to. Any thoughts on that?
I believe that in one way they're being pushed to release information, and I think what they're releasing is just a minor part of the real truth. At the same time, I think many times when they do things, they do it not just for one reason, but for a multitude of reasons. And one of them can also be to scare, to show that we are capable of anything. You know, this whole thing with all these guillotines being ordered, all this ammunition being bought up, 1.6 billion rounds, as far as I know, with this special. What is it for? I mean, it's almost like they're trying to freak the population into thinking, oh my God, it's going to be used against us. You know, maybe that is the plan, or maybe they're trying to freak us out by saying, well, there's no chance for you anyway, so you might as well just give up and lie down. I don't know.
Well, let me go into the second point here, and this is, you talked about they want Americans' guns, which I think is absolutely the truth, but I think there's an additional agenda here, and that is just simply fear. Mm. Fear for fear's sake. The goal is a country that's totally in a state of fear. And they'd like to get rid of the guns too, but I'm just saying, you know, I just say as an American that the United States today compared to, let's say, 30 or 40 years ago seems to be really far more tense than it used to be.
For sure. Fear is that's the major tool they have. They try to freak you out, freak us out. You know, that is the whole thing. That is why you're being pumped in media all the time, negative, negative. Get your head down, down, down in the dirt, into despair, into desperation, into fear mode, because that is where they can control us.
Right. Fear. And there used to be more good stories, you know, on the TV 30, 40 years ago. There were far more, you know, somebody overcomes adversity and becomes a success, right? And now it's more like, constantly just negative in the background sounds and videos and everything are really, really to promote tension. It's quite ugly.
Very ugly. I think it was in 1983, there was about 50 corporations controlling or owning the media in the States. Now it's down to 5, as far as I know. So it's very, very, this is the whole thing they've been working on so hard for such a long time, to centralize the power to fewer and fewer and fewer without us noticing it. And fear is one of the major tools they're using.
Well, I certainly notice that the news is all the same. I mean, a story happens, and it's like they use the exact same phrase on all the channels, all the wire services, everything. It's like it's all written in one place.
It is. But this is the thing, it is. It really is.
I know.
And this is why. This is why in my newsletter I put together things. You know, sometimes you can have a speech done in Canada, and then you have the exact same speech by an English minister, you know. And then you put them next to each other, and you can just time them so they follow each other's perfect. And also the same with media, just repeating the same words again and again and again. It's like 30, 40 different stations with the exact same wording. What does that tell you? What does that tell you? And I used to work as a journalist, but this was years and years ago. But I know that so much information was given to us, you know, like in press releases, and most so-called journalists, they just took the paper and copied it without really asking questions. Or we were being served, you know, this is the thing, and you better take it. There wasn't. So with journalists, also nowadays, journalists are so stressed for time, you know, they have so much to do, so that they're not given the chance to really look deeply into things. So I think real journalists really need to get back on the stage and start doing what they're supposed to do.
Well, in the States, I don't think it's even legal really anymore. There's a famous journalist named Jim Mars who wrote books on the crossfire and all that.
He
talks about in his early days as a beat reporter, he traveled with the police, right? So he went to a murder scene or an accident scene, and he got right next to the dead bodies, right? And so he would write about stories. But, I mean, he was there. And the point is that today, reporters are not allowed anywhere within sight of the dead bodies.
They're so not allowed in anywhere. You know, corporations are
they're not allowed in the police cars. They won't be allowed in police stations before long.
No, but you know, like in the European Union, for instance, like that. That is a place where journalists should really check out what's going on here. You know, this is the center, a massive power center, where so much is decided. Are journalists let in? No, they're given press releases. This is it. This is what we decided. Thank you and goodbye. Can we ask questions? No, very sorry. Goodbye. Go away. And that's it.
Yeah, you can go on YouTube and you can look up essentially clips of reporters from, you know, 30 or 40 different news networks. And they're all essentially spewing the exact same lines. It's like, you know, somebody somewhere at the top of the pyramid wrote a script and then, you know, sent it down the chain, and basically it's word for word the exact same thing. So that goes to tell you how controlled it is.
It really is. And when I used to work, it was like we had TT and Reuters, these news agencies that was just pumping it out, and nobody ever questioned it. Not that I know of. You just, yeah, for sure, it's TT. Oh my God, then it must be true. You know, and but it's not.
And then we also have the staged news events at CNN where they got caught with their pants down. I think it was in the first Iraq war was one of them, and then there's been a couple other ones since then where they got caught totally staging even the news. So that's how bad it is.
Yeah, well, but even the news, it's the news they get to. That's the way they get to us. You know? So I would very much suggest to people, turn off the box, turn it off. You know, it's not called TV programs as a joke. It is programming. They're using it to get to us through our subconscious and through fear, pushing us down. So one way of getting out of their grip is to shut it and turn it off. You know, and find your own news, find your own ways of getting information.
Well, that's what we need to work on.
Yeah.
Hey, getting back to the staged Hollywood stuff, I think the most interesting one in recent years was the Boston bombing.
Mm-hmm.
It had
I really like the Woolwich beheading as well. That is my absolute all-time favorite. It is so badly done.
Well, that's not a B movie. That was a C movie. That's like the blood goes uphill and and the car. You know, I mean, that was really pathetic.
People are still buying it.
Well, actually, you know, in a sense, it's more speculative, but you can almost go into the question of are people in a – is a certain percentage of people just in a – are they in a trance? You know what I mean? Are they just sleepwalking? Because some of these stories, like, well, obviously with Kennedy, his head going the wrong way and stuff, to believe the official story requires – basically disbelieving obvious physical reality.
But
you know what I mean?
Like even
like these beheadings where it's like, okay, now we're about to behead the guy, Allah Akbar, and the guy just sits there and waits, and then his head is off and there's very little blood on the ground, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just totally ridiculous. But some people believe it, and you almost have to think that I don't know. It's the pain of disbelieving is too great. They're stuck. What do you think?
I think that to wake up to the fact of what is actually going on, it really is so painful for many. It's sometimes I compare it to when you lose somebody that you really love. You know, these old belief systems, everything you've been taught and told, and you thought that, and even maybe you've been fighting for it, you know, on the barricades for the whatever political party or whatever you've been part of, and then you suddenly discover, oh my God, I have been totally taken for a ride in so many different areas. And so people go through very almost the same stages as when they lose somebody, loved one, like first total disbelief, and then they do everything to fight against who's ever telling the truth, you know. They defend their old belief system with weapons almost. Then when it finally hits home that, oh my God, can this really be true? Then some people go very angry, some people go into depression, some people get very, very just crushed. And then in the end, hopefully they can come out more in balance and start seeing what is actually going on. I mean, I've been down this road for 30 years, so I feel now that I'm in a position where I feel more balanced inside, and that makes me cope with this type of information in a better way. Because what most people do when they start waking up also is they start pestering everybody around them with this very, very black information, and that sort of, it's totally understandable, but it's not very efficient, because people will start avoiding you. I think everyone in this conspiracy world have noticed that people will start, oh my God, can you please be quiet? I can't take it anymore. Everything just, the whole world seems to be black. But so that's not the way to go. You need to show that you can deal with these type of things, and then live by example. And then when people slowly starts becoming open for it, then deliver. But if you start trying to push the door in, it won't work. You need to wait for people to open from the inside, so that they welcome this type of information. If that makes sense.
Well, sure. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yeah. Right? When it comes to you asked, are people talking in trance or asleep? I tell you, I don't understand it. I mean, there's so many of these conspiracies that are, in my opinion, total no-brainers. And still to this day, it's still, if you even mention it, you're a so-called conspiracy theorist. I mean, like with Bobby Kennedy, for instance, the Sirhan, he was never closer than 1.5 meter, 130, in front of Bobby Kennedy when he started shooting. As soon as he started shooting, they jumped him, pushed him down on a steep table, got the gun away from him. The revolver had 8 bullets, and somewhere between 13 and 14 shots were fired. Also, Bobby Kennedy was hit 3 times. Was he hit straight from the front where Sirhan was? No, straight from the back and to the right. At the last one that entered his skull was point blank up against the skull, you know, even burned away hair. So you don't need to be a rocket science to just put a question out there. Could there have been a second shooter? But absolutely no. Still to this day, this was 1968, and people are still saying, oh, no, it was Sirhan. I mean, my 10-year-old daughter would just say, absolutely not. It must have been someone else.
Hey, Ule, in regards to the Kennedy assassination, I think that's when the CIA actually started to float sort of the conspiracy theory label and attach a negative connotation to it.
That was 63, after the JFK assassination. It followed right after. That was when the wording conspiracy theorist was born. And the reason why they put these two words together, I mean, we're so brainwashed with them together. So as soon as somebody says conspiracy, your brain will say theory.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is to create the doubt around it, you know, instead of there are real conspiracies. I'm only interested in conspiracy facts. I'm not interested in theories.
Yeah, and I mean, if people look up the definition of conspiracy, it's essentially something to the effect of two people, you know, plotting something secretly or behind closed doors. So it's like I always say, you know, before I get up in the morning, I've already probably committed, you know, 2 or 3 conspiracies, or not before I get up, rather, but before I go to bed, you know, I've probably committed 2 or 3 conspiracies myself.
But this is also why they always want to blame it on one single crazy guy. He has to be alone so that there's no conspiracy, and he has to be crazy so there's no motive, you know, because then it can be case closed, bury the guy, boof, and move on, folks, go home.
Well, they maybe in the past they would have just burnt a witch or something. You know, yeah. I mean, it's just so contrived. But I think the other issue with people being in a trance is that it's like your book says, it's a coup d'etat in slow motion. And that has a lot of implications. One is that it's not one event. It's a whole series of events, right?
Yeah.
But the other thing is it's not a crime as such. It's a takeover. It's a takeover of the country you're in. It's a takeover of the world. And so it's really quite threatening, right? I mean, your way of life, right, is in danger. And certainly, I would say, as an American, really, the quality of life is dramatically lower than it was, I don't know, 35 years ago or something. I mean, I know that's hard to compare because you have smartphones that, you know, jump up and down and stuff. But really, they took over, and they've been giving us the shaft ever since.
Big time. I think, no, especially on the 22nd of November 1963, that was one of the major steps forward from this group, where they really took over big, big, big time. And so many different agendas started at that time. So wherever dark area around the global so-called elite or the downfall of the states and many other countries, it started there. And it's just been speeded up, especially after 9/11. They just hammered it in. So compare the states before 2001 and now. I mean, totally different. Or the whole world is turning into
really,
a totally different
place.
But
you know, this is kind of negative. But I think we could talk on the bright side. I think traveling around the world, I see a lot of positive trends. Like you're saying that people are waking up, and that the elite, or whatever you want to call them, the Bilderberg types, may be getting desperate. I actually think that may be the case. I see a lot of signs that they may be losing their grip on, I don't know how you want to call it, but especially in, I guess you might say, second-tier countries, you know, Brazil or Turkey or, you know, whatever. I don't think they are having their way the way they would like.
I totally agree. I think this is super times to be alive. It's going down. In my book, they're going down. Big time. I think this is a beautiful time to be alive because this is when it's happening. They're totally losing it. It's falling apart around them, I think.
Do you think that maybe, I don't know, and again, this is sort of speculation, but do you think there's some type of metaphysical force that is kind of, I don't know how to say it, but sort of working against these people or working against these plans? I don't know.
What are we talking about? Like angels or that type of thing?
Well, or what, you know, whatever term you want to put on it. I mean, you could say it's, I don't know, an alien intelligence or an angelic intelligence or the logo. What, you know, whatever word you want to put it. Do you think in your heart that there's some type of metaphysical force fighting these people?
I don't know. I've focused so much on the street level of things, tracking down assassins and serial killers, these type of things. So I've always avoided getting into UFOs and angelic forces and so on, because not to lose credibility.
Right,
at
right.
At the same time, in my personal opinion, is that we are in a universe where left is needed to understand right, up is needed to understand down, evil is needed to understand good. And these forces, these awful things and so on, is necessary for us to evolve as spiritual beings and so on. So if you look from a very much higher perspective, I think we almost have to, I wouldn't say be grateful to these very dark forces, but this is what is helping us to wake up, because we have been so asleep that we have apparently needed all these very, very drastic things to wake up.
All right. I guess I was just asking because it seems like everything they do seems to be backfiring on them, right? And I didn't know if that was sort of a karmic thing, or, you know, I guess people can interpret that whatever way they want.
Backfiring, they've done this for such a long time, and now they run out of options. It's like you see a magician doing a trick on stage. Once you start seeing, I mean, to start where you think, oh my God, it's pure magic. But then the more times you see it, suddenly you notice that he's actually not doing the trick with his left hand, he's doing it with his right hand behind his back. Once you see it, his power disappears. Once you see it, and you can just point it out to your friends and say, oh, check out, he's doing it behind his back. That's where the power, they lose the power. And they have been getting away with this for such a long time just because they have been hiding in the dark. They've done this in dark rooms of power, dark corridors of power. And this is why my website is called Light on Conspiracies. This is what I really try to do, is fearlessly aim light, not violence, but light on them, exposing, totally exposing their methods, who they are, what they've been up to, how they are duping us and deceiving us.
Ule, a related thought might be that these, whatever you want to call them, masters of darkness, are relatively good at destroying, but they're not so good at creating. And they've kind of destroyed themselves too, haven't they? You know, if you look at their planners, right? The people like Kissinger or Brzezinski or some of the geostrategists in the West, I think their quality, their brain power, whatever you want to call it, was immensely higher 30 or 40 years ago. People like some of these guys now are too old, like Brzezinski. I'm saying that the current generation, let me put it this way. They put fluoride in the water of their guys. They put all these negative forces in the country, right, in the West. Mm. And I think it's damaging their guys too. And so what goes around comes around, as the English saying goes. And so their destruction, they're destroying themselves too.
I really think you're on there to something there, because I've never been able to understand the agenda, because what the only thing they do is destroy. They destroy nature, they destroy the air, they destroy our health, it's the work of a mad mind. When you look at Agenda 21, for instance, like, whoever came up with that, I know exactly who wrote it and so on, but this is like somebody let out from an asylum, you know, like totally mad mind. So how they work or why they do these incredibly destructive things, I don't get it. But
on the bright side, they may be bringing themselves down. And
do you know what Gandhi said? He said that at times when I despair, I always remind myself that dictators have come and gone. For a while, they looked invincible, but then every single time they've fallen, and most of the times on their own, that they destroy from inside, you know.
And that's actually my thought, by the way. Some people look at it like they say, oh, NATO is so incredibly powerful and unbeatable. And I actually think, well, typically empires collapse from within.
They do.
They become corrupt. They no matter how much technology they have, they can't make the same quality of fighter jet or whatever, because they're so corrupt. And they've so poisoned their technicians. The technicians have aspartame in their drinking material and everything. You know what I mean? It's just – so I'm actually positive. I think we have a fighting chance in this. It's just that it could be messy as things, you know, kind of implode, so to speak. But why don't we go back to a couple of the events that you've spent time on and some of the effects that you've seen. Right.
Sorry. I just wanted you say that actually positive. I'm super positive. I am super positive about what is going to happen here in the future. It's just a matter of how it will happen, because I feel deeply in my heart that we are fine. We are going through a very difficult time at the moment, a scary time, but we will be fine, and it's just a matter of transcending this obstacle and how then to be able to create a beautiful future for us all, because then once this bully starts messing around with us, then suddenly the responsibility is on us, and then the question is, will we be able to create a beautiful future for ourselves, or will we just start fighting between us? And I really believe that we have to focus on compassion, forgiveness, these beautiful moral ethics to be able to carry this on. I just want to say also, when I look at this, they call themselves the global elite. I call them the minority, because there's so few. There's so few when you compare. Maybe they're in the thousands. We are in the billions. So, I mean, it is an absolute joke that we even see this as a problem. But it is like a cancer growth. And I really think the mentality behind this group is like a cancer. It just, you know, it think that it grows and grows and it's getting stronger and bigger and great, great, great. They're really succeeding. But the result would be that it kills the body that it's inside, so it kills itself. And this is the same with this elite. They're killing themselves, you know. This, if they had been a bit more patient and not so greedy and taking it a bit more slowly, maybe we wouldn't have noticed it. You know, in the old days, they used this method called stepping stones, a little here, a little there, a little here, a little there, so that we wouldn't notice that things were connected. But now it's just full speed, head on, you know. So you have to be very, very asleep not to see that something very strange is going on. So, back to the Volkswagens.
Well, I agree with you. They maybe they have a deadline. I don't know. It's hard to understand. But, you know, I tell you what, though, reading their documents and paying attention to these folks for many, many decades, I would say that they thought they would be a lot further along.
Yeah.
I think they thought they would have a new world order by around the year 2000.
Yep.
And by that, I mean a new world order where they thought they had the game locked up. And they certainly didn't get it. That doesn't mean we're living in paradise. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm just saying that they thought they were going to have a hell of a lot more than they actually have. And they just seem to be frenetic now. They're really in a hurry. And so it's hard to know why and why they didn't go more slowly. I don't know. But they also are getting reckless and careless. And that, again, you know, you have to wonder, you know, what is it that they think is going to, you know, why they have to do that? I don't know. But anyway, going back to the false flags. So what ones do you think kind of stand out that people should, I don't know, look into to see some of the lessons that can be learnt or whatever? What events do you think really illustrate something that's worth thinking about?
Well, like I say, my absolute favorite is the Woolwich beheading. That one, I've done many interviews, 2-hour interviews, just going into great details about that one, because once you start seeing it, just becomes like hilarious. At the same time, when you see who is reporting it, we're talking about big news agencies like the BBC. Who is the owner and the copyright, has the copyright of all the footage and so on? ITV Productions, not ITV News, ITV Productions, that only do films and theatre things. You also have Scotland Yard, you got the English police making statements on the news and so on about this. So that means also David Cameron right away is starting talking about these things. It just shows you how they are connected, this group that are carrying out these things, how they have control over these different agencies and different government authorities and so on. And this is, once you start seeing how it's carried out, and you just, you will see in Australia, I can almost, without having seen this latest shooting, I can almost tell you who came forward, who said what. How was it carried out? Who was it blamed on? I won't know the exact details, but I can tell you, I can more or less say exactly what happened. And so, and then once you start seeing the template, you can just see it being repeated again and again and again and again. So,
well, presumably the Woolwich one was totally faked, right? It was just a theater production, right?
Totally, totally. And it's so obvious once you start getting into the details about it. That's why I love that one, because that is very, very obvious once you start seeing it. The whole thing, how it was staged, set up, how everyone, you know, they even made more than one take of the same event, you know, where it's not the same background action and they've got different, in one he's got blood on his hand, in another one not. You got all the cue markers, you got a dead body without a head, no blood, the crash car that does not make any sense at all. You know, the damages on the car does not match up with what it's supposed to have done. The vehicles on site that is blocking off the roads and the traffic are two buses, which is standard for the extras being driven there. One truck, for some reason, these trucks, when it comes to film sets, are most of the time white. And these are the trucks that are driven in there. When you open them on the side, they have lighting, makeup, clothing, all of these things. And this is one of the vehicles, once again, that blocks off one of the side roads.
Okay, Ole, if I may ask then, because you worked as an extra for quite a number of places, all of these crisis actors that we're seeing now, and then, like you're saying with this Woolwich thing, there must have been extras around of some sort or whatever, you know, all the film production people or whatever. Aren't we talking about a fairly significant number of people here involved in these things? I mean, wouldn't they know? I mean, in other words, you wouldn't know how this was going to be presented to the public, but you would know that you worked at a certain location, more or less, right? Wouldn't it be ridiculously suspicious to a lot of people? Or do you think they all just accept what they're doing?
Who are we talking about? The background action or
people? People who are getting paid. Let's say somebody who's working on it as a job, right? Let's say you're the guy who drives the bus that takes people to block off that street or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So you park on a street, and then next thing you know, 2 days or 2 weeks later, it's the biggest story in the country. A guy got beheaded there, right? And you know that you're involved in movie production, and you made it at exactly the same location 2 weeks ago. Right.
But this is the thing, that they only use their own people. So do you know, like the CIA, the NSA, the MI6, MI5, and so on, they have budgets that, I mean, you cannot even imagine. Where are these money used? Where does it go? And people also, when you look at the Operation Northwood and other, I would say 9/11 as well, where you have these people going on board on a passenger plane. Who were they? I would say the chances of them being CIA employees and so on with created identities are very, very big. This has been exposed in many different documents and so on, that these people that they use like that is just their employees. And then they end up dead, but the dead ones are fake identities. When it comes to these things, I've always been a bit, just like you, confused, especially like with Sandy Hook, when we're talking like hundreds of people. And I spoke to Chip Tatum, this CIA whistleblower, because he's been involved in false flag operations early on in his career. And I said, how do you control a group like that? And he said, it's very easy. You know, there are different options. Money is the first one. They get well paid. And the reason why they keep using the same actors is to keep it to as small a group as possible. Then they have people directly from the film industry, which is very much controlled by them as well, because film and music is one of the areas where they can really affect the population. So this is one of the some of the areas they've really, really focused on. And then if it doesn't work with money, then you have intimidation. You start, you know, you just threaten them a bit. You know, if you don't do this, I'm sorry, your brother's children will die, or your dog will die, or grandmother will suddenly have a heart attack or something. That freaks most people, freak them out and keep them in line. And if not that, you just make an example, you statue an example by getting rid of one, you know, so that the other ones know that, oh my God, that's that extra there who was killed or committed suicide was murdered, and that will shut the rest of them up. So Chip said it's very easy to control a group of people like that, but most of the time you use insiders. You have like CIA whole families that you just use the kids as extras and so on. So he said very easy. I would say those at the same time very sloppy as well. Once you start being able to observe that it's the same people that they use, many of them have been the same.
Well, I also think a lot of these stories only work the first time you hear them. They don't they don't hold up very well.
We're back to Rocky 1, 2, and 3, you know.
Yeah,
when you see Rocky 38.
Yeah, the story gets a little weaker, I guess is what I'm saying. And so you've seen the same thing where, you know, like with 9/11, almost all the guys they talked to worked in the news industry, right? I mean, it was amazing. They interviewed all these guys or had on the phone all these guys, and almost everybody was like CNN, NBC. You know, they were all in the news business.
It was not almost all of them. It was all of them were somehow connected to the five different networks. All of them. It was the wife of this, or it was a guy working in the cafeteria, or it was the news, this and that. They were all connected, not by chance.
Right, and so that raises all kinds of questions about the entire stories that they gave us. And I'm, to be honest, suspicious about groups that, you know, immediately pop up, like 9/11, whatever, I don't know. There are all kinds of groups, you know, victims, families, and, you know, support groups and architects and all kinds of things. And I don't mean to pick on anybody, but I'm just very suspicious because if I were orchestrating some of these crimes, I would have all these things ready to go at the very beginning, because there's that classic quote, I think it was from Vladimir Lenin, that the best way to control an opposition is to start it.
Exactly, and as soon you will see that as soon as a group starts gaining momentum or starts gaining real exposure and so on, it will be infiltrated. So this is the sad thing, that even though the intention might be really, really good, they will try to infiltrate them. So this is why I always avoided all type of groups. I've always been just me, because I've been in areas, especially in Sweden, where there were so-called private people, private detectives, trying to solve the assassination of the Swedish prime minister. But my God, after just a few months, there were so many strange people entering in and giving us such a bad rep and creating conflicts inside. And it's for sure they will be infiltrated.
Hey, I got a question for you. When 9/11 happened and you were watching it on TV and following the news, what telltale signs did you see that immediately stood out?
What really it took a while for me to see the signs there, because I was really shocked by it. And I mean, it was the whole dustification of the buildings to start with. That was just like, where the hell did that old dust, where that dust come from? And what happened to the rubble? It was just gone. It was, the buildings just disappeared. And that did not make sense at all. And then all of this paper, tons of paper flying around and aluminum, and all these strange car fires. I mean, I think it's like 1,400 cars that started burning far away from the actual site. And also the way that these buildings, instead of going like a pancake, plop, 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 they should have slowed down. Instead, they accelerated. There was just like, it did not make sense at all. And the debris being thrown upwards and to the sides, way out to the sides, it doesn't make sense at all. And then three buildings, the three only towers in world history that has collapsed, that has come down like that ever from what is said to be a fire, from a plane. It just right away, there were so many weird things going on. And also what really got to me was like within half an hour, they were talking about the war on terror. And you had Bilderbergers on both sides of the Atlantic, like, yes, we have to join the war on terror. Even Sweden, that is a neutral country, we have to support this. And I was like, wait, wait, wait. You don't even know who's done it. So how, and what does that mean, war on terror? It's the perfect false flag. You can carry, you can just continue forever and ever. So there were signs right away that just like, something is very, very strange here.
Well, to me, in the States at the time, it looked like the at least American news, like American CNN, just constantly went on and on about Bin Laden. They went into a Bin Laden mode at some point. I don't know
That
how, I
was
don't remember.
within 20 minutes. Bin Laden was there right away, and I never figured out how on. How could they even suspect him at that point? But
Well,
this is when
I guess
this is when
they
this.
saved the payroll receipts and the receipts for all the bombs and no, just kidding. It's a good question how they would have known, but I mean, just immediately to me, like you, looking at the scope of the damage, and then it also, of course, supposedly hit the Pentagon and what have you. It was like, well, this could very likely have had major governmental support, right? So, you're sitting there saying, okay, so who are they going to claim did this? The Iraqi government, the Syrian government, the Iranian government, maybe unhappy factions in the Russian government? What are they, they have to come up with like guys who have serious manpower available, right? Money, technology, whatever. And they didn't do that. That's what amazed me. That no, it's just guys with box cutters.
Yeah, that
And
didn't make.
that just seemed totally amazing to me. It's like you're sure that it was guys with box cutters. So I knew we were in trouble right away. I mean, I knew this was like grim. The world was heading in a bad direction at that point.
Yeah. No,
But
and the thing was just like I said before, they will serve you the solution very, very quickly. And here, boom, came Bin Laden. Who the hell is Bin Laden, and where did he come from, and how? Those people in the studio of CNN, how can they even start talking about this guy? Or, before it's there, no proof, no nothing, and it was already a fact. Bin Laden, Bin Laden, Bin Laden.
And
So.
at some point the narrative switched and they started interjecting Iraq and Saddam Hussein into the mix as well, which
Yeah.
really made no sense at all because he didn't even really have any relation to Bin Laden or Afghanistan. And if you talk to the average Joe on the street, like they were so confused, they had no idea. They didn't know if Iraq did it. They didn't know if Saddam or if Bin Laden did it. They thought Bin Laden was working for Saddam. Like, they had the
Yeah.
narrative so screwed up in people's minds, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on what happened at the Pentagon? Not to get into too. I mean, it
What do you
just.
mean? What happened that it was a missile that hit?
That's my
As far as
assumption,
I
but.
know, no. As far as I know, that is exactly correct. But what they did was that there was a passenger plane that came very, very low and flew, but that passed across the Pentagon while there was a helicopter. The missile was fired from a helicopter, and that was the one that hit the building. But the plane just passed over and continued on the other side. But the whole Pentagon, it was reinforced, especially that area where the impact was, and the exact offices that were blown up were the offices that were taking that they were the ones looking into where this $2.3 trillion had disappeared. That $2.3 trillion, most people are not aware of the how much that is, how many zeros that is. Do you know
Well,
that
Ule, that 2.3 trillion, went into the place where they do all these productions like 9/11 and all the video scams.
That's what I'm saying. It's not easy. It's not difficult with amounts like that to finance small little black ops like, false flagged film stage like that. You just give them $500,000 or whatever. You know, they will shut up. Most people would just be bored for a lot less than that. So it's not that difficult to understand.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
You know, 2.3 trillion, as far as I know, that is the total military expenses for the U.S. for 7 whole years. That is a lot of money. That could save, like, countries, you know.
Hey, guys. I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about Sandy Hook. What is your take on that, Ule? Do you think, like, are there sort of towns that are, like, I don't know how to explain it, but controlled by these production companies? Because people sort of say, well, you know, Sandy Hook would be impossible to pull off because the whole town would have to be in on it and so forth. I'm just wondering how you would reply to a person that would ask that question.
Do you know Mr. X in the JFK movie? Do you know the guy that Jim Garrison went to
see? Fletcher Prouty.
Exactly. Fletcher Prouty. One man that I really admire. He said once that he was going with Alan Dulles, the director for the CIA, and they were in Greece, and they were driving down the road, and then Alan Dulles said to Prouty, "Have you seen that town over there?" And Prouty said, "Yeah. What about it?" And he said, "It's ours." And Prouty said, "But what do you mean ours?" He said, "Every single person there is on our pay list." It was sleeping agents, retired agents, and their families. It was all active agents, you know. And he said, "We got this in Greece and Germany and Italy. These, as far as I remember, were these. In Miami as well, you have these like urbanizations that are totally theirs, the whole thing. And it's very often in a very luxurious area, you know, with golf courses and swimming pools and so on, so that these people, these agents or mercenaries, are having a good life. And then when they need it, they just activate them to do whatever. They send them and carry out whatever mission they're on, and then back home. When it comes to Sandy Hook, I get a very strong feeling that this is such a place where it's a tiny little town, but totally controlled by them. Because when you look at it, you will see all the signs that it's totally staged. All of them are there. That this whole thing did not occur. Nobody got shot. You can even see on FBI's own homicide list over Newport and these areas. There's one homicide or two, not at all with these mass shootings, because they're very clumsy. I don't get it. Why don't they fake it good, you know? Why don't they, when they manipulate everything else, why don't they just fix it so it's properly done? But with Sandy Hook, absolute, total fake, all of it.
Well, I think no matter how hard you try, there's always going to be certain variables that they just don't account for. And you also have to realize that, you know, when you look at the brain power and the collective consciousness of the internet, for lack of a better word, or collective consciousness of all the people that are starting to wake up, and they're scrutinizing every detail of these things. So, you know, people are finding those nuances that they didn't account for, I think. I mean, like, for instance, Sandy Hook, there's all kinds of these little breadcrumbs. I mean, you know, you look at the date that the properties in the area are registered, and they're all registered on the same date. There's indications that the school wasn't even active, and people are just dredging these things up.
This is the thing. It's wonderful, wonderful with the internet. And I tell you, these people who release the internet to normal people, they do regret themselves. I mean, it made them billions and trillions or whatever, but it really has messed it up. I think we were talking about before, how come that they haven't succeeded, how they thought that they could just take over. And I think the internet is the one that they didn't really were aware of that it would backfire like that on them, because people are so good at finding these things nowadays. It's wonderful to see.
And I would also speculate that there are people sort of within the conspiracy that that really aren't happy about you know, what they get involved in, and they don't like the direction where this thing's going. And I would assume that there probably are some of these people kind of helping and pointing people in the right direction from the sidelines, so to speak.
For sure, I know there are. But this is the thing, it's so compartmentalized that people only know their little part. It's done by the sign, all these operations are done like that. So very, very few people know the whole thing. And very often these so-called drills, people are totally naive, thinking, oh, this is a drill, and then suddenly it goes live in the middle of it, with them not understanding that they're actually part of something really bad. And no, the people are good. That's what I feel. General people, good. They mean well, they do well, and sometimes they mess up, and sometimes they get into areas where they have no idea what type of shark waters they got into. And then afterwards, when they see, oh my God, was I part of that? That is when this type of information starts leaking out. You have all of these whistleblowers coming forward and so on. So it's absolutely wonderful to see.
And I think, as you said, like a lot of these start out as a drill, quote unquote. And I think that that is, I don't know if it's outlived its usefulness for them, but I think the whole drill thing has become just so exposed now that I don't know how they're going to continue to use that one. I mean, that now is essentially the first thing people look for. And I guess operationally it would make a lot of sense too, because if they say there's a drill, you know, then that way the local police department and, you know, all the people that would get notified can sort of be controlled and contained, right? So I think they're going to have a hard time with the drill bit going forward.
Oh, this is wonderful. I mean, this is thanks to programs like this and discussions like this, because had it not been exposed in the way it has been, it would have just been able to carry on and carry on. Now, I would say, in many interviews, I really, really ask normal people, if you hear about a drill or if you see something that is being set up in your neighborhood, in your town, in your city, that looks like a film set or looks like something like you see strange vehicles officially marked or bomb cars or things like that, go down there, take your mobile or your video camera, start filming them. Make it very, very obvious that they are being observed. And I tell you, by doing this on a big scale, I think we can make this stop, because then they won't even be able to start putting up the stuff there before people will be observing them, pointing fingers, and it will just blow their cover.
Just as an anecdote in relation to that, I noticed the recent Australian event with the terrorist at the chocolate cafe or whatever, there were tons of people watching this happen, taking videos and whatnot. And of course, the mainstream media spun it in a negative way and said, you know, look at these people. They have no respect for what's going on. You know, they're taking selfies. And I just had to laugh at it. I thought, you know, it's awesome that these people are down there, you know, not believing it for one, and also documenting it for group two.
Fantastic, fantastic. Because the more footage, the more hard evidence that can come out, the better it is. You will see, when it comes to these staged events, it's very limited the type of footage that comes out. It's one, two, three different angles normally. That's it. But when you see a normal thing, there will be people with mobiles filming all over the place. So,
hey, Jerry, that cafe had a drill. It had a terror drill.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it was, I don't think it was the same day, but essentially.
No, it wasn't the same day, but.
But the exact same scenario.
What are the odds that you're going to have, you know, a similar scenario at exactly the place where you'd had a drill?
I mean, it's strange. credulity.
I'm just trying to say, okay, let's say they've had 100 drills in Australia, right? Okay, in the last 10 or 20 years. Okay, and, you know, how many cafes or places that people go are there in Australia, you know, a million, you know, 500,000? So what are the odds that it's going to be at a place that you'd had more or less the same drill? You know, quite suspicious.
It's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous.
Well, I think that may be another agenda. They're trying to overwhelm us with stupidity. I mean, I don't know. This is so ridiculous. Sometimes you think, you know, do they think people are that dumb?
But, you know, I met people from the Swedish secret police and so on, and first I got really scared of them. Then when I started speaking to them and so on, because I exposed them on a meeting, I recognized them from, and I pointed them out to the rest of the people. So suddenly they were surrounded by people saying, what are you doing here? And we started talking to them and so on. My God, they are not very intelligent, many of them. Just because they have like a badge where it says CIA or Secret Service does not mean that they're very intelligent people. That is at least my impression.
Hey, Ole, this is. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think it's an important point. There's another reason for the these bad Bilderberg types being at risk of losing, you know, losing their dreams, and that is to them threatening talented people. I'm sorry, intelligent and talented people could be a threat. Right. And so I think they've intentionally been hiring. You know, in the States, they don't want to hire intelligent people to be police. Right. If you take an IQ test and do better than 110, they don't want you. Right. Well, it's a similar thing in the FBI or the KGB. The TV image that, you know, the X-Files that, you know, you're first in your class and have 140 IQ. That kind of guy would stir things up and cause trouble.
Yeah.
They don't want those kinds of guys. That's a problem
this is
the
trick.
System.
It is, because they need intelligent people, but intelligent people...
But they
will
can't.
They
can't hire them.
It will also become a threat to them. This is also the same where when you see dictators take over and the military people think, yeah, great, great, great. But then not even the generals are safe, because the more powerful the military becomes, then the dictator starts fearing the military. So he, on a regular basis, he will start chopping the head of the generals just to give space for new ones. So it's like this is it destroys itself from the inside.
Exactly, exactly. And
this is the wonderful thing.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, everything has, you know, particularly bad things, have the seeds of their own destruction more or less already in them from the genesis, so to speak. And I think these Bilderberg Illuminati types have their own destruction kind of built in. And so that's why I'm also fairly positive. To me, we talked about, like, where did things get over the top? For me, the Sandy Hook kind of took things to a new level. That took the staging. I mean, that's just like a totally false thing of a whole town. And there's also a sign that they used, like, you know, the children later. In other words, it looks like it was a whole family town, so to speak, like you were saying, Ule.
Yeah.
Like a CIA town. And that really is interesting. They're now, I don't know if you want to say, taking it to another level. This was quite a test for them, I think. And I'd like to think they didn't really get what they wanted. They went out there saying how we got to get rid of the guns, and then they have that actor who says his daughters are, you know, died, and he's laughing, right? You saw that on YouTube, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Parker, Robbie Parker. That was a big fail for them. I think they took things to another level, and that failed. They did not convince people. And you know who Catherine Austin Fitz is, right?
No.
Catherine Austin Fitz? Okay, she had worked in high levels in the U.S. establishment and kind of became an enemy of the state. And so she goes on radio shows like this one and, you know, other conspiratorially minded shows. And she thought one of the big positive signs of the last few years that the American public is not buying the story on gun control. Not at all. They're not being, you know, scared, yes, we need to give up our guns. Not at all. That's not what's happening. They're saying, first of all, they're suspicious about a lot of these events. And in addition, the conclusion is, well, if bad people have guns, the answer is that good people should have them too. And you know what I mean? Anyway, it's failing. It's a fail. And she thinks this is a positive sign, and I do too.
Totally. Super positive.
Yeah, and so they've been pushing so hard on that, and I think they're actually, in a sense, pushing against themselves now. They're getting desperate.
They don't know what to do. I mean, what can they do? People are waking up. They're starting to see, oh, my God, this is going on. This has been going on for such a long time, and we're not buying it anymore. So what are they going to do? It's the same with this. First it was Al-Qaeda, I mean, and then they changed the name of the boogeyman to ISIS. What are they going to do the next? I mean, now they dress them up like Ninja Turtles, and it's just so bad, the whole thing, when you see this head chopping, you'd start looking into the body, the proportions of the body. Is it an Arab inside this black Ninja Turtle outfit? Absolutely not. It's a European. The accent, where is the accent? You check the accent, does not fit at all. You change the background. It's out sand sky, so there's absolutely no way you can see where it is. Is that on purpose or not? Wherever do you film, can you film something where it's just sand sky? Very difficult to do. There's facial structure, the journalist doesn't fit. You know, it's just like, so now they chop the head off to freak the people out, because that's the whole point of it, to freak the population out so that they will accept the solution. So next time, when they can't chop the head off, what is going to be the next one to try and freak people out? To take a saw and cut off the top of the skull and then eat the brain with a spoon? No, we did that in Indiana Jones too. What are they going to do? You know, because also, they numbed the population with all these video games. I mean, kids, you can't freak a kid out now by chopping off arms or heads or whatever. That's normal video games for them. So what are they going to do? How are they going to freak the population out next time? They're running out of options. It's wonderful.
Well, I think they certainly have gone over the top, and I don't know if they're going to recover. They've pushed it. I don't know.
Won't.
They still have. You know what they have? They have the real option of do the real thing. They haven't done that yet. You know, some bomb that, you know, blows up 50,000 people or whatever. They eventually might have to do something real. I don't know. But that has some ramifications. They may not want to use that card so easily because, first of all, if you do something real that's big. Right. Not these fake names on a list. Right. Of, you know, CIA agent names that never really existed. But I mean, if you actually kill real people, like 100,000 people, there are going to be some powerful people who had their relatives in that. You know, they're not going to be very happy about it. And
it depends on what country you're talking about, because they kill a lot more people than that in other countries.
Oh, sure. Oh, no. They do it, of course, in Iraq or something. But I'm saying that. To escalate it to another level would take something big in a major, you know, Anglo-American Empire country like Britain or the U.S. or Holland or, you know. And
but
I don't
you
know.
They already pulled off 9/11, and that has been exposed. I mean, what can they do bigger than the Twin Towers? I mean, that was the ultimate.
Ole, I'm saying that they may – look, we're talking about them getting desperate. If they're truly desperate, then they could use, you know, whatever, a small nuke and actually take some town of 100,000 and make everyone in it die. Okay, that's what I'm saying. And if they did that in a country that mattered, not Iraq, but in, let's say, Britain or, you know, Canada, that would radicalize things dramatically. And we would enter a new darker age as things played itself out. However, that is a one, you know, they can only do that once, right? Because after that, they have to like shut down the internet or, you know what I mean? They have to do all kinds of crazy things to prevent us from having this discussion in the future, right? And I don't look, I'm not living here in fear. I don't want people to live in fear, but I'm just saying they've played a lot of cards and they haven't worked out for them.
Yeah.
And we should be positive about it, but realistically they do have that card. However, you know, don't kid yourself. If they have to shut down the internet and they have to shut down the financial functioning of a society, they've got a serious price to pay with that. They will weaken themselves dramatically in their struggle with places like China or Russia. You know, if you go into a total shell as a country, you won't be able to do much business either.
Well, there's actually signs that I think they had, at least on one or two occasions, I think they had planned to do something like what you described, Paul.
That's certainly possible. Some attribute some things to Dick Cheney, and he would certainly be a good candidate for it.
But,
his heart's in the right place.
Again, I think with these events, I think enough data leaked out that the events were perhaps prevented. It would have been difficult for them to have something occur that essentially was telegraphed, and you know, people put their predictions out on the internet. And I think Ule even may have helped avert something at the Bilderberg. Maybe he could talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, I'd be most happy to do that. It was I was invited as one of the key speakers to the Bilderberg meeting in Copenhagen this summer. Not at the Bilderberg meeting, but outside. And when I came there, I just noticed there were some very, very strange circumstances around the choice of building and the whole surroundings. And I spent quite a long time trying to figure out why on earth they would have chosen that hotel. It's quite a long story. I'm not going to go into great detail. But what I suddenly discovered was that it was a very, very badly chosen hotel security-wise for the Bilderberg Group. And on the other side, it was the perfect place for a false flag massacre. And the whole way that that could have been carried out would have been to demonize the whole truth movement that would have been gathered outside this hotel. The whole idea would that they would be blowing up the hotel, killing a lot of people in the truth movement, blaming the truth movement for having placed the bomb inside the hotel, where the Bilderberg Group had not they had not gathered. They would only have been a few doubles in there. I've made a lot of interviews about this whole thing. You can find on my website, lightonconspiracies.com, where I go into great details. But I checked it with both Chip Tatum, this CIA whistleblower, and other people in different security agencies and so on. I described the whole scenario, the strange things I found, and they said, oh my God, it really, really could be a false flag that they planned here. And so what I did was I went out on many, many international radio stations during the night and spread out the info that this is what could be planned. And hopefully it turns out that nothing happened. Maybe I was totally wrong, or maybe they had really planned this, because in that case the agenda would have been to demonize the truth movement and then hit the internet saying that, oh my God, it's over the internet that groups like this spread this type of terrorist information, and so we need to limit, shut down big parts of the internet. We need to shut down alternative media and ban all rights to gather in groups and demonstrations and so on due to a thing like this.
On that note, I was just wondering what your thoughts were about the London Olympics, because there's a lot of really bizarre stuff associated with that, and a lot of people were speculating that you know, there's some type of event planned there. And then again, on the other side of the coin, other people said that they were just kind of setting this stuff up to make the conspiracy theorists look foolish. I don't know. I was just wondering what your take on the London Olympics was.
I think just to make the conspiracy theorists look foolish, they would never have spent like millions and millions to do that. The whole setup and the incredible amount of work they put into details, Freemasonry details and ritualistic things and so on, I would not have been surprised if they really planned on a big event there, that they had planned something to go down big time there, but that so many people were getting aware of it, that there was so much info spread beforehand that they decided to stop it. So
that's my take as well. Yeah,
I think that was once again one thing that didn't go the way they wanted it.
Well, they may be having a lot of them. There's a lot of evidence they've tried to attack Iran a couple of times, and that has failed inside the system, the U.S. Right. Navy, and so on. I mean, you know, it's just hard to say. But, Ule, before we wrap it up, kind of a last topic for today, I think that's worth going into, would be where you think things might be going from here. Of course, it can be in the context of false flags or what you think we're seeing more of or could expect. Are some of these things going to move to Europe, for example? It looks like every day we're getting a dubious shooting in the U.S. Anyway, what are your thoughts? Where are we heading in the next, I don't know, year or so as far as false flags and such go?
If I have any say, I mean, I'm just a normal single guy. But if I have any way of making a difference, my aim is to make this stop within the next 6 months or so. They say that the next Bilderberg meeting is June the 1st, 2015. I say before that, I want this to be over. That they have, I think the awakening that is going on, you will not see it on media, normal media, but there is an incredible awakening going on globally. And this thing, you know, it's not like a linear awakening or a linear fall down or what you want. It goes like an avalanche. Once it starts falling, it will just crash together. And I think that they are. I think we're going to see the end very quickly of this group. And I'm come from a total non-violent perspective. I'm not here to promote revenge or hatred or hit back in violence or anything like that, because when you see revolutions over here during the history of the world, you will see that if the dictators, if the population take over, chop the head of these guys, within a very few years, the people that are taken over, they become even worse. So that's not, to meet this with violence is not the way. And violence is also their ball game. That is their language. We need to somehow transcend this in a different way, in a non-violent way, just like Gandhi managed to get the UK, England, the whole British Empire out of India totally without violence. And I would say that is the way to go forward. And truth is the weapon. Truth and exposing what is going on will make a major change.
Well, they say sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Oh, that's a beautiful one. Yeah.
And I think it's true.
And also to become, for normal people who don't know what to do, I would say that please become aware of that these people are very aware of energies. And that is why they're trying to push us down with fear all the time. Because fear is the lowest energy known in this universe. It's the lowest one. That is the one. Pure terror is the one labeled that. It's a very, very low frequency. And the highest in the universe is what is called love, real love, not falling in love or that type of thing. But that frequency, according to scientists, are higher than even the frequency of thoughts. And if you, in a laboratory, if you let two frequencies meet, one very high, one low, what happens is that it's not that when they meet that they start fighting in the middle and it comes out like in the middle, the 50-50%, that's where it ends up. No, the lower one just, boom, get annulled. It just disappears. Just like when you turn the light on in the dark room, the shadows just vanishes. And it's so this, my opinion is that try and raise your inner energy to get it up, so the less or the more you get out of fear mode, the harder it is for them to control you. So, and the best way to get higher in frequency is gratitude. The more grateful you feel, the more you fill your heart with gratitude. You have to feel it, not just think it, but feel it. Whatever you can find around you to be grateful for, that will start raising your energy. You can feel it, and you will start seeing after a little while, if you start doing this on a daily basis, that the people around you will notice as well. And it will make you stronger, more balanced, and in a position also where you will be able to make a lot better decisions and not just run around like a headless chicken.
That's some good advice. I think that's what we need to think about, is that at the end of the day, it's not the mechanics of how they're going about something. It's more what we should be focusing on to bring ourselves to a better level.
Yeah. And also to become aware of that dangers are real. There are such things as dangers, but fear is only in the mind. Fear is not something that is real. It is only in the mind, and that is where we can deal with it as well.
Yeah, very well put. Very well put. Well, Uli, let's call it a wrap for this time. We thank you so much, and those are some inspiring thoughts to close on. So, again, we appreciate you coming.
Thank you so much. And if somebody would like to support me, please buy my book, sign up for my newsletter, my membership area, or donations. Extremely appreciated.
And your website is Light on Conspiracies?
Yeah, Light on Conspiracies. And just mark my words, 2015 is going to be the best year ever. This is the year it's going to happen.
You know, I think you may be right. Anyway, that's it, folks. It's a wrap. Thanks for coming, Uli.
Thank you so much. Take care and Happy New Year.
Okay, bye.